Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This is the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. But first, this program is dedicated to Erefuah Shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifer Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. And I want to start off by just saying, just to illustrate how urgent our campaign to support the Hilltop Youth in Judea and Samaria really is. The Arab Muslim enemies of Israel are building, on average, 7 new structures every day in Judea and Samaria. 7 new structures every day. Multiply that by 365 days a year, and you'll see what a catastrophe we have in front of us. They're seizing acres of Jewish land all the time, on a daily basis. They are taking over Judea and Samaria. They're taking over the biblical heartland of Israel to create a Palestinian state, even though there are no Palestinians and there is no Palestine. If we don't support the Hilltop Youth, who are the only group that have broken out from the accepted settlements, because the accepted settlements, if we stay just in the accepted settlements, we're going to lose 95 to 97% of Judea and Samaria. We'll retain maybe 3 to 5%. And we'll lose land within pre-1967 Israel. So we're going to be in a situation where Israel will be 6 to 9 miles wide, completely suicidal. We have to support the Hilltop Youth, or we're going to face a terrible catastrophe. Chas v'chalila, God forbid. It's essential that we support them. Now, you may notice that I look a little worn out on the program tonight, because for several weeks now, I haven't slept the way I'm used. I'm accustomed to sleeping 7 or 8 hours a night. I believe in good sleep. I think that sleeping 7 or 8 hours a night is essential to health. And especially when you get to be my age. I'm 65 years old. I'm an old man. So sleeping properly is very important. And I do get my sleep, but sometimes I only sleep 4 or 5 hours a night, because I have to be up late on the nights when we think that there may be the destruction of a Hilltop community, because they need us. They need to be in touch with me, because we help them. When those things happen, we rush support and help to them. So in the past couple of weeks, not just this week, but the past couple of weeks, I've been a little worn out, and I know I look a little worn out. I apologize for that, but there's nothing we can do. This is a fight for Israel's survival. We've got to win this fight, and we have a chance here to change Jewish history for the better. We have a chance here to win a miraculous victory that is very important to Jewish survival. So please, everybody, let's participate in this, and let's work together in order to make this happen, in order to support the Hilltop Youth, support them financially, and help us also spread the word about JTF and our programs everywhere you can. Make this a priority, because we are talking about Jewish survival here. That's no exaggeration. People ask how they can contribute to the Hilltop Youth. There are two ways. They can go to Hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page, and on Hayamin.org, all they have to do is click on the donate button in English on the top, because most of them, obviously, it's a Hebrew main page, so almost all the page is in Hebrew, but on top there is a donate button in English. You click on the donate button, and in a couple of minutes you can very conveniently and easily contribute and make a difference. Every contribution makes a big difference. That's online. Through our PayPal account. You go to hayamin.org, and it's very easy to contribute. The second way is through the regular mail. Checks and money orders can be sent to our post office box. The checks and money orders can be made out to JTF or VJA. VJA is our tax-deductible organization. JTF is the political organization. Both of them are essential. And you send the checks and money orders to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365, JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. Okay, Let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers. And we start out with Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes. I'm going to read this in Hebrew quickly, and then I'm going to answer in Hebrew. I'm going to quickly answer in Hebrew. It'll just take a couple of minutes. I know most of you don't speak Hebrew and won't understand it, but I'm going to translate, and it won't take long. It'll just take a couple of minutes. Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim Hayakar Mashlomcha. Ma datcha al ha'efsharut she'ani yarutz la'kneset ba'bechirot haba'ot eye sug shel natzig shelcha ba'kneset haba'a im ani ledatcha yachol lehat'im liot chaver kneset. Ratziti lehagid she'ata tzodek milyon legabei noar ha'geva'ot ani mukhan leshatef itcha peula legabei ze. ב-23 לחודש אנחנו מארגנים מפגש זום של תנועת אחדות ישראל או אחדות ישראלית. אני אישית אשמח תהיה איתנו, ותודה רבה שדיברת איתי בזום יחד עם אודי ורטמן, יוסף רבין, איתי גרנק, בן ציון גגולה ועוד הרבה אנשים טובים. אשמח לדבר איתך שוב בפרטי, באהבת ישראל, רם מאיר אברהם. And Ram basically writes if he thinks he should run for the Knesset and if he thinks he would be suitable to be a member of the Knesset. And he also writes that they're going to have a Zoom meeting, and they're inviting me to a Zoom meeting on the 23rd of this month. It's going to be in Hebrew. For Israelis are going to be at the meeting, and they want to, and that he thinks that I'm right about the Hilltop Youth. Ani mode lecha Ram, ve'anachnu ken bezrat Hashem nitra'e ba'23 lachodesh, ve'anachnu yecholim ledaber al kol hanosim. Ani mekaveh she'nuchal ledaber al kol hanosim she. הם רלוונטיים לעם ישראל ולארץ ישראל. And now we're going to Binyamin Yisrael, great JTF, who writes, and I quote, one, part one, why do blacks celebrate the end of slavery on Juneteenth and not the anniversary of the passing of the 13th Amendment that actually ended slavery? And then there's a part two to the question. Binyamin, we can't start splitting up questions. We said two short questions per person. Please, let's not start splitting up the questions. If this gets out of hand, I can't answer the questions. I mean, I'll read what you wrote this week. But please, two short questions per program. Not splitting them up into different parts, which is in effect asking more than two questions. Blacks celebrate the end of slavery on Juneteenth and not the anniversary of the passing of the 13th Amendment that actually ended slavery, and Binyamin wants to know why. Because blacks never want to celebrate or acknowledge anything that whites have done. They don't want to celebrate the 13th Amendment because that's something that was done by whites. And they don't want to acknowledge that white people freed them from slavery. They didn't free themselves. They couldn't free themselves out of a paper bag. They couldn't find their way out of a paper bag. But they never want to acknowledge anything that whites do, and so they've invented this mythical holiday called Juneteenth. And Binyamin now writes, comment on the following, many blacks think slavery ended on Juneteenth. That's only when it ended in Texas, the last Confederate state where the Emancipation Proclamation was put into effect. I remember arguing with morons on Facebook, and I said, June 19th, 1865 is not when slavery ended, and one of them said that's when it celebrated because it took time to be enforced, even though Lincoln freed slaves in Confederate states in 1863. That's not the issue. The last slaves were only freed on December 6th, 1865, when 13th Amendment was ratified by three-quarters of the then states, 27 out of 36, and became part of the Constitution. I think it's silly when blacks in Delaware celebrated, even though they were still slaves in Delaware and Kentucky until December. I guess they have no conception of history and time, just like they don't with numbers. Mm-hmm. Juneteenth is a regional holiday in Texas. It reminds me of how Cinco de Mayo is a regional holiday in a part of Mexico where the French were defeated and after the French took over all of Mexico. People think it's Mexico's Independence Day. They should celebrate when the French were kicked out, not when the French lost a single battle and then took over Mexico. Okay, thank you for your comments, Binyamin. And now we have one more question from Binyamin, too. Juneteenth could refer to any date from June 13th to June 19th. What is the origin of the name Juneteenth? Is it some Ebonics word? Unquote. Yes, it is an Ebonics word. It's a combination of the word June together with the word 19th. So they can't say June 19th because that would be too civilized. That'd be talking like a white man. You'd be talking. I don't want to hear you talk like a white man. So they say Juneteenth. Juneteenth is June 19th. Juneteenth. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks the greatest questions. And Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, "See Rambam, Laws of Injury and Damages 5:3, quote, a Gentile who strikes a Jew is liable to capital punishment, as it states, Exodus 2:12, and he, Moses, turned this way and that and saw that there was no man, and he killed the Egyptian." Unquote. However, Rambam, Laws of Kings 10:16 states, a Gentile who strikes a Jew is liable to death from God for causing even the most minimal damage. Nevertheless, he is not executed by a court. Unquote. Why does he change his wording? I don't think he changes his wording. I don't think so. I think that there are just different circumstances here. I don't think that one circumstance covers all cases here. When Moshe Rabbeinu and Moses killed the Egyptian who was beating a Hebrew slave, when he did that, he was ready to begin waging a war for the liberation of the Jewish people. He wanted to see what was happening with the Jewish people, and he saw that the Jews were being oppressed and that this was in effect a war on the Jewish people. This oppression was a form of war on the Jewish people, and in a situation like that, of course, there is capital punishment and death for those who torture, oppress, and murder Jews. As far as whether or not a court can impose a sentence like this on a Gentile who strikes a Jew, whether a rabbinic court can impose a sentence like this, I think there may be a distinction between what Jews can do in the exile and what Jews can do in the land of Israel. I think sometimes there are distinctions there. In the exile, when we are in the galut, the exile, when we're not living in our own homeland, and we have rabbinic courts, we also have Batei Din, we have rabbinic courts in the exile as well, but they do not have the power to impose a death penalty. They don't have the power to do that. The only thing, but a Gentile who does strike a Jew, even if he can't be executed by a rabbinic court, let's say because the Jews don't have the power to do it because they're a persecuted little minority in some foreign country, even though their court cannot enforce a death penalty in a case like that, that Gentile should know that he's going to face death from God, either in this world, that something will happen to him eventually, he'll lose his life eventually, that God will take his life, or in the next world, because that could also mean a place in the world to come. That person who strikes the Jew can face terrible consequences in the next world. So I think a lot of it depends on where exactly the court is situated. If it's in the land of Israel, if a court is situated in the land of Israel, Jews do have the power to carry out the death penalty. And I do think that when the Arabs throw rocks at Jews or strike Jews or physically attack Jews, I do think that there should be a death penalty enforced by rabbinic courts in the land of Israel. I know some of this is sometimes complicated, and some of this is my own interpretation of what Harambam, of what Maimonides is saying. So you can take it for whatever it's worth. I'm not a rabbi, and I'm certainly not Maimonides. I'm certainly not Harambam. Maimonides is Harambam. So you can take it for whatever it's worth, but I do think that sometimes when rabbis give their views on commandments and laws in the Torah, sometimes distinctions are made between where things are going to be carried out and when they're going to be carried out and what the circumstances are. I do think sometimes there are distinctions that have to be made And I think this might be a case of that. At least that's the way I see it. Thank you, Hirvatsky. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, hope all is well. One, hate crimes are up in New York City, mostly Asians, gays, and Jews. Please, pray tell, will the news ever tell us who the majority of the perpetrators are? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course they're not going to tell us, because as you very correctly hint in your comment, the vast majority of attackers are black. The vast majority of violent crime in New York City and in the United States is carried out by blacks. And so, yes, most of the people who attack Jews and Asians are black. That certainly is true, and that's something the media will never tell us. They will never share those statistics with us. Never. All statistics are always reported in a politically correct way. In fact, if you watch the media, you would think that blacks are the ones being attacked day and night by white racists, that white racists are just constantly attacking black people. It's just that blacks are under siege from constantly being attacked, when in fact the opposite is true. The vast majority of racial attacks in the United States are blacks attacking whites, Asians, Jews, all different groups of people. That's the vast majority of racially motivated attacks and hate crimes in the United States. Not just in New York, but in the United States in general. But the media never tells us that. And the way they report the news, it seems like the opposite is true. Dr. Dan also writes, too, New York City Council members have voted non-citizens the right to vote for future mayors, etc. We already know the conservatives and Republicans are canceled out even without this measure. So what was the point of that? They will be silencing the votes of black voters. interesting point. They want to do whatever they can to empower and legitimize illegal aliens in the United States and to make illegal aliens and other people that come to this country from third world countries the majority. And it's already 58-40, it's already 58-42. 58% of the country are white Anglos, what used to be called white Anglos, and 42% are from third world countries or non-white countries. 42%. So we've gone from about 15% when I was a boy, when I was first entering high school, we've gone from about 15% non-white minorities to 42%. And that number is growing at a much faster pace now. And so they want to empower them and give them as much power as possible. And I don't know how much of a difference it's really going to make in New York City politics. Who do we have to elect in New York City anyway? Everybody running, and anyone who can get elected in New York City is going to be very, very bad no matter what. Thank you, Dr. Dan. Great questions as always. And now we go to our good friend Yimach Shmota Islam, who writes, when will this SJW crap ever end? If anyone wants to know, SJW stands for Social Justice Warrior, unquote. Well, it's never going to end because the media and Hollywood and all the powers that be, the so-called educational system, educational institutions, are intent on brainwashing everybody into thinking there's something noble about promoting the most evil people in society and persecuting the most righteous and the best people in society. And anyone who is civilized, anyone who has any culture or civilization or education or decency or discipline or work habit or anyone who's half decent, anyone who even takes a shower, is frowned upon. And the lowest filth on the face of the earth are the ones that are promoted, and they're the ones who are being handed control of the whole country. And that's not something that's going to end. I think it's only going to get worse. Thank you, Yimach Shmota Islam. We now go to another good longtime friend of ours, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I am not a COVID anti-vaxxer. I have already received two doses. At any time since this pandemic started, were you at all skeptical over it, unquote? Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to as skeptical. You mean skeptical that the pandemic exists? No, I was never at all skeptical. I never had the slightest doubt that there's a real pandemic out there, and we've seen millions of people killed by it, including my mother, Zichrona Livracha Aleiha Hashalom. May her memory be immortalized, and may peace be upon her. So I know that millions of people have been killed by this, and I saw what happened to my mother when she got sick from this. So this is real. So I'm not skeptical about the pandemic existing, and as far as the vaccines are concerned, again, it depends which country you're in. Sometimes it's 80%, sometimes it's 85 or 90%, sometimes it's 95%. But in country after country, it's the unvaccinated who are the sick people in the hospitals, who are the sick people that are dying. It's the unvaccinated that are the overwhelming majority, even though they're only a minority of the population, because most people did get vaccinated. And the statistics could not be clearer. So it's incomprehensible to me how anybody could even doubt what's going on here. It's just incomprehensible to me. I cannot understand the logic of people who fail to look at simple, pure statistics. And if anybody says those are fake statistics, you cannot fake statistics. That you can't fake. On that scale, you cannot fake statistics in every single country in the world. On that, especially when you're dealing with tens of millions of people who have either been hospitalized or millions that have died, you just can't fake statistics on that level. It's just absurd. And so, there's no question that the pandemic exists, that the vaccine has been effective to a great degree, and now we're getting different variants which could complicate things and could make the vaccine ineffective eventually. And the reason this vaccine is living on again is because of the unvaccinated. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to another old-time good friend of ours, Uli, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim, do you have an opinion of David B. Goldman," unquote. Well, first of all, he was a member of the Lyndon LaRouche cult at one time, which is a completely crazy, crazy group of people who believe in the most insane conspiracy theories. Now he's thought of as a conservative critic of the Federal Reserve, and he speaks about demographics. Some of the things he says are true. He criticized the Federal Reserve. I think the Federal Reserve shouldn't exist at all. I think what they're doing is very harmful to the economy. I think they're printing and pumping trillions of dollars into the economy is what's causing this massive inflation now that we have. I think it's one of the main causes of the inflation. And it was predicted that this was what the result was going to be, and they insisted upon doing this because they wanted to pump up their stock prices and their stock portfolios. And now we see the consequences. And David Goldman has been a critic of the Federal Reserve, and on that issue, I think he's right. I haven't heard everything he said, but on that particular issue, he's right. He also sometimes is right on the issue of demographics. He mentioned that the Arab countries are doomed to fail, that we shouldn't have any faith in the Arab Spring or Arab democracies or Arab revolutions or Arabs changing things, because he said basically because of demographics, because of who they are and the nature of their society, they're doomed to fail. And I certainly agree with that as well. Arab countries are a bottomless pit and will never succeed. And even when you give them huge amounts of money like we had with the petrodollars in the Persian Gulf, morally and otherwise, they're still going to be a nightmare for the world. That I certainly agree with him on. There may be other statements he made that I'm not aware of that I disagree with him on. I don't know, so I'm reluctant to say in general, but some of the things he says sometimes are true. Thank you, Uli. And we now go to another very good friend of ours, Noah Hyde, who writes, and I quote, "Are Jewish and non-Jewish men allowed to listen to a woman sing?" Unquote. Jewish men are limited in this area. And the reason women singing and women dancing, that Jewish men are not supposed to see women live singing and dancing, is because it may arouse sinful thoughts. And we believe very strongly that people should, it's hard enough to control someone's passions in this world. We have a body, and it's part of our test that God tests us with. And we're in this world to control it so that we can live proper lives, moral lives, decent lives. And if we let things get out of control, we're going to do things that go against God's laws. So Jewish men, I'm going to speak about non-Jewish men in a moment, and I may not be that helpful with that because I don't know what the law is for non-Jewish men. But as far as Jewish men are concerned, listening to a woman sing live can be very tempting and can lead to all types of thoughts. Many rabbinic scholars have said that Jewish men are allowed to listen to women singing on the radio or singing on television or recorded singing, that is permitted. Also mixed singing, in other words, Jewish men and women singing together, many rabbinic scholars have said that is also permissible. But in person, live, the general feeling is that can lead to sinful thoughts. As far as non-Jewish men, Noach, I apologize, but I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't know what the law is for non-Jewish men. There are sometimes differences. Judaism is more flexible when it comes to non-Jews on issues like this. Because the Jews are supposed to be a nation of priests, a nation that are in the Holy Land. The Gentiles are going to be controlling all the other nations of the world in the next world, in the ideal next world that we strive for. The Jews are going to be in Israel to maintain the Holy Temple so that all the Gentile nations can come and so that they can visit the Holy Temple and make sacrifices and receive their prophetic inspiration from God. This is where they're going to have an uplifting, magnificent prophetic inspiration that will keep them going for the rest of the year and keep them on a high, a spiritual high for the rest of the year. The Jews are going to be in charge of the land of Israel and the Holy Temple to make sure that that's all ready and properly prepared for all the Gentile nations to come and be part of that. The Gentile nations, on the other hand, they're going to control all countries outside of Israel. All lands outside of Israel will be controlled by the righteous Gentiles who will be in the next world. And by the way, only righteous Gentiles and only righteous Jews are going to be part of the next world. But because of that, because the Jews are especially close to the Holy Temple and especially have to have a special role there, that Judaism is stricter when it comes to rules for Jews. Gentiles, sometimes there's more flexibility. I don't know in this case, because Gentiles also are supposed to control themselves and are supposed to have proper morals and are not allowed to have immoral sexual relations. And of course, the relationship between a man and his wife and a family with children, a loving family, that's something that Jews and Gentiles are both should both be doing. So I don't know though what the ruling is on non-Jewish men listening to women singing. But again, I think that non-Jewish men should also be aware of the fact that one of the most powerful things that can lead someone downhill very fast morally is sexual attraction. That's a very powerful thing. If it's used properly, if it's used to build love between a man and his wife and a beautiful family, then it's a beautiful thing. If it's improper, it can destroy somebody and it can destroy society. So it's something to bear in mind. Thank you, Noach Hyde. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think is the greatest moment in Israel's history? Can you pick one moment in the ancient times in the modern state of Israel? Thanks, unquote. I think the greatest moment was the 1967 Six-Day War. The entire Arab world marched on Israel's borders. Israel was within the tiny pre-1967 borders. And the entire Arab world was proclaiming openly at the United Nations that they were going to exterminate the Jews and push the Jews into the sea. And most of the world expected it to happen. They figured the Jews aren't going to survive this. Look at this. They're outnumbered 100 to 1. This is crazy. They can't survive. So the world thought that this was going to be the end of the Jewish people. And many Jews thought that. I could tell you, as someone who was around when that happened, I mean, I was a 10-year-old child, but I remember how worried the Jews were, and Jews in the United States were very worried. They really thought that this is going to be the end. Or at least many of them did. They didn't know what to expect. And in 6 days, tiny little Israel, outnumbered 100 to 1, beat back armies on all of her borders, and in 6 days absolutely destroyed and devastated Arab armies. I don't know how many Egyptian soldiers were killed in the Sinai in that war. Huge numbers. Huge numbers. I don't know the exact toll, but it was very large. And most of the Egyptian army, most of their tanks, most their air force was completely destroyed by Israel, by the Israeli air force, and the Assyrian air force was completely destroyed by the Israeli air force. And most of the tanks, most of the Egyptian and Syrian tanks and the tanks of other Arab countries that came to attack Israel were captured by Israel. There were huge rows of tanks, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tanks that had been captured by the Israeli forces, many of them intact. It was just such a breathtaking miracle. In 6 days, Israel quadrupled in size. Israel was four times her original size in just 6 days. This is not a Hollywood movie. This happened in real, this happened in our time in the 1967 war. We saw this with our own eyes happen. 10 of ye shall chase 1,000 of them, 100 of ye shall put 10,000 of them to flight. We saw the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. We saw miracles in the 1967 war that if they were described in the Bible, everybody would say, oh, that can't be. What are you talking about? That's nonsense. That's just the exaggeration in the Bible. We saw it with our own eyes happen. I think that was the greatest moment in Israel's history. And we had a chance then to bring the Mashiach. Harav Nir Kahana Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. Our great leader, our beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, may God avenge his blood. He taught us that in the 1967 war, that victory, those miracles, that breathtaking, incredible victory, that was the Messiah knocking on the door, the Mashiach knocking on the door. We could have brought in the Mashiach at that time if we had just annexed all of the liberated lands, settled all the liberated lands, expelled the Arab Nazi enemy that wanted to destroy us from those lands. If we had done the right thing and done what God commands us to do, we could have brought the Mashiach right then and there. We could have had the final redemption. But the Jews unfortunately blew it. And they had cowardly leaders who destroyed everything and wound up giving back most of the land. And just complete insanity. And I hope now, at least now that we have a spirit of redemption and courage and heroism among the hilltop youth, I hope that that will inspire Jews to want to support, to want to support this incredible group of people who are doing what God wants us to do. If we do what the hilltop youth are doing, if we adopted their policies, the Messiah would come, the Mashiach would be here already. Easily. And all of our enemies God would destroy all our enemies and we would have eternal paradise. Thank you, Joe. And we now go to pro-Jew Greek Christian. Welcome once again to our forum. And pro-Jew Greek Christian writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim 1, it has been many years since I've asked you a question on this show, you do that is loved by so many of us longtime JTFers. I came to you during the 2007 campaign against Obama after seeing one of your YouTube videos. I have been a dedicated follower and listener and recently have been trying to contribute more regularly, as I know how essential your work is with the Hilltop Youth. I'll keep my comments brief and add more next week, but I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for showing me the truth and always being a voice of uncompromising truth and principle. I really need to change my name to pro-Jew Greek Gentile because you have brought me to believing in Tanakh and Torah and being a strict monotheist in the Noahide tradition. That's just absolutely wonderful. You made my day. And I had a pretty rough day today, but you absolutely made my day with those comments. Thank you so much. And the second... Second point here is, for old time's sake, Chaim, could you please tell us a recent affirmative action story? Thank you so much, Chaim. And the writer's name is Paul. A recent affirmative action story. You know, I don't know why. Me, this gets to. I can't stand it. I can think of several, by the way, but here's one One I'm not going to talk about because it's, I don't know, about what black women did on the street, walking around half naked with their giant tuchuses. I'm not going to go into that. It's disgusting, but I don't even want to go into that. But here's a story. I'll give you a story that I'm walking down the street, and what do I hear? I hear this booming microphone. Someone's screaming in the microphone, and of course it's some black preacher screaming and yelling, and he's supposed to be preaching, and he claims to be preaching from the Bible. And he's preaching hatred against whites, he's preaching hatred against Jews, against Asians, he's preaching hatred. And he's explaining how Moses was a black man. Mm-hmm. Abraham was a black man. Everybody knows this. They don't even want to tell you that all the great things we has comes from black people. You know, they take black scientists and they hide them and lock them up in the laboratory, and they make the black scientists in the laboratory invent things, and all the things that we see that have been invented, they were invented by black scientists. This is what is being done in our society today. And this has been, we have seen this being done for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought people would think, oh, this guy's a crackpot, you know. But I'm seeing all the black people. I'm seeing black people standing on the street, listening to him and going, mm-hmm. You know, I'm seeing just unbelievable. And then I see this white woman with a black boyfriend, which you see in a millions of them now. It seems like there are millions of them now. You see this black woman with a white boyfriend, and she has her hair kinkied up, even though you could tell that she made her hair Rastamaster style. You know, she made her hair all kinky, and she was actually a pretty attractive young white woman, and she made herself so ugly. She had rings all over her face and all over, rings and pins all over her, stuck in her face and stuck all over the place. And she's listening to this, and she's going, I couldn't believe it. She's speaking like a, she's going, She's with the mm-hmms too, even though she's a white girl. She became an mm-hmm. You know, it's just unbelievable. When I was young, 40 years ago, you know, 35, 40 years ago, long time ago, the only white women that went with black men were usually the ugliest white women that could never get a white, that could never get a white guy, and that were just desperate, and that were just, and that many of them were alcoholics or drug addicts or hookers. And they had either black pimps or black drug dealers who were using them. Those are the only type of white women you would see, generally speaking, going with black. It was unusual to see anything beyond that. Now you see white women, well dressed, going to universities. They go to universities. I mean, you see them near the university. You see them walking out with their books and everything else, and they have a black boyfriend with them who looks like a real, you know, who really looks like he just came out of a burned out building in the Bronx. I mean, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But that's what's happening to our society. Thank you very much. I appreciate the question, and your comments really, really really uplifted me today. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And now we go to another great JTFer, Nachas, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, one, your thoughts on Kiruv. Kiruv means bringing Jews closer to Judaism, working to bring Jews closer to Judaism. Of course, we urgently need to do that. We urgently need to try to bring Jews closer to Judaism and try to awaken the Jewish spark within Jews. Hanitzotz HaYehudi, Nitzotz HaYehudi is in Hebrew, the Jewish spark. In Yiddish, when I was a kid, Jews still spoke Yiddish, and they used to say the Pintelayid. Pintelayid is the same thing, Jewish spark. We urgently need to do that. There's no question about it. And unfortunately, we don't have organizations that do it effectively, in my opinion. My opinion, we don't. And it's a shame, because we've lost the vast majority of American Jews. The vast majority of American Jews are assimilated, intermarried, just out of it. And that's really very, very sad, because we have a spiritual holocaust that is raging in every country outside of Israel. It's a very, 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 very bad story that we have here. And Nachas now writes, 2, on classical music as opposed to today's music, also of existentialism, thanks, unquote. Well, classical music, obviously classical music is better than today's so-called music. And by the way, Nachas puts music in quotes, because Nachas has good taste. Today's so-called music, I would rather listen to a construction worker drilling a hole in concrete than listen to today's so-called music. To listen to rap or hip hop or anything else. I would rather hear a construction worker drilling holes in concrete. I would rather listen to almost any type of noise than rap noise. It's the most horrific. It's just absolutely horrific. So, of course, I prefer classical music. Not only classical, anything other than rap and all this other, and the garbage we have today. It's just absolutely, absolutely atrocious. And you know, the music we had when I was young in the 60s and 70s, a lot of it was very immoral. A lot of it brought down the morals of the country. But at least then it at least was creative. Now the music isn't even creative. It's just orangutans ranting. There's nothing even creative about it. Nachas now asks about existentialism. Existentialism is just the philosophy that we just exist and that there's nothing beyond this. And of course, I don't believe in it. I think it's a crazy philosophy, and I feel sorry for people who believe in existentialism, who believe that we just exist and there's nothing beyond this. You know, there have been studies taken of the difference between religious people, and not just in the Jewish world, even religious Christians, religious Muslims. Religious people live longer than non-religious people. Religious people are healthier than non-religious people. It's obvious why. You know, believing that this is it, and you're just going to get old like me and die, and that's all, and there's nothing to look forward to, you know, that would be a pretty depressing thought. But if you believe that there's a loving God, and that this is just a test, and that we're in this world to make this a better world, and to work to help good people and good causes, and fight for justice and righteousness and truth, if you believe in that and you live for that, you can be happy even while you're getting old, and even more, and even when unfortunate things happen, as they always do in life. Life is not easy. Life is not a picnic. But people who understand that they have a higher calling in the world are going to be happier. And we do have a higher calling, because the very existence of the world proves that there's a God. Something cannot be created out of nothing. The fact that the world exists proves that the fact that there is a creation proves that there had to be a creator. Has to be. Not to believe in God, to believe this just happened out of nowhere, that is true insanity. That is ultimately the most illogical thinking that anybody could ever possibly have. It is true insanity. Thank you, Nachas, for your great questions as always. And now we go to another great longtime friend, Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, Hanukkah Sameach, belated. Hanukkah Sameach means happy Hanukkah. Please explain what this video referencing you is all about. Also, do you know what happened to this man? I read on the web that he passed away, but do you know how it happened? I thought it odd since he was such a young man. Thanks. And I don't even know what this is. I don't know what this is. Let me... Hold on. Okay. Yeah, I don't even have sound here, by the way. I don't have sound. I can only see... I could see the video, but I don't have sound while I'm doing this program. I can't have sound for a certain reason. This was a tragic, very tragic story. This is a young man who disagreed with JTF and disagreed with me, and we had a debate back and forth, and he was responding to me in this particular video. He was responding and speaking about how he disagreed with me and how he thought that everything is love, and you know that God. Anyway, he had his own interpretation. I mean, I also believe in love, and I also believe that's very important. But I don't believe that we're supposed to love evil people. I think there is a theme in the Bible that evil people have to be destroyed. I think it's pretty clear. But he didn't see it that way, and he, you know, whatever. He disagreed with me in the video, even though he was quite respectful. You see in the video, I mean, he's very respectful and very nice to me in the video, but strongly disagreeing with me. And he did tragically pass away. I don't know what caused him. I don't know what caused his death. I can't say for sure, but it certainly is a tragedy because, as you can see, he was a young man. Thank you, Italian Zionist. And we now go to our longtime great friend, Confederate Kahanis, who writes, and I quote, "De Chaim, what's your take on Jussi Smollett? Thanks and God bless." great question. And the fact that this hasn't been turned into something bigger. This is, for those of you who didn't keep up with this, Jussi Smollett is someone who, a black actor, a homosexual black actor, by the way, who claimed that he was the victim of a hate crime. He made up a fake hate crime. He claimed that Trump supporters were attacked him and did all types of terrible things to him because he's black and because he's a homosexual. And it was all fake. It was all made up. And he was just convicted, by the way, of 5 felony counts of faking things. And he caused a national uproar when he made this claim. He claimed that, and everybody was condemning and saying, look at this, look how terrible. Oh, Joe Biden and everybody else was screaming and yelling, oh, this is awful. And what's her name, Kamala Harris, you know, she was screaming and yelling that this is, look at this terrible hate crime and look what we have in this country, these terrible racists. The fact is that we have a lot of hate crimes in the United States. That's true. But 90% of them, 80 to 90%, are blacks attacking everybody else. That's the vast majority of hate crimes are black people attacking everyone else. We have, for instance, elderly Asian people that are really getting hit hard now in New York City. These cowards, they're going and attacking elderly Asian people. Why? Because they're Asian. They're Chinese or Korean or whatever, Vietnamese, or whatever it is. And they attack them, and they rob them, and they throw them on the ground, and beat them, and terrorize them. And in almost all cases, the person doing this is being done by a person or persons, they're black. And we never get the truth on that. So here, we had a chance, we have an example of a black man, and he's also a homosexual, which is another part of the media's demented agenda. So we have these two elements here, and they're trying, oh, they're going to show now how terrible the persecution of these people and how what a horrible country, we a racist, homophobic country that we live in. And all of it was fake. And you know, when it was exposed as fake, when all this was exposed as fake, it's amazing. All the people who were screaming and condemning everybody under the sun, screaming and condemning Republicans, conservatives, white people, all the people that were screaming and yelling, not one of them apologized for falsely accusing and condemning people. Not one of them apologized. That shows what this country's become, unfortunately. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And we go now to Joe Brandon, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim, a joke parable. Why are apes always pissed off? Please guess and then highlight the correct answer." Okay. I have no idea why apes are pissed off, but I'm going to cheat and I'm going to look at your correct answer right now. And the answer that you give is because they know that in a million years they will be niggers. Okay. The only thing is, Joe, I think you're being unfair to apes. I think you're really being unfair to apes. Apes are not bad animals. God made apes, and they're actually not bad animals. I have never seen apes selling crack cocaine and heroin and other forms of poison, addictive, destructive poison, to children in their own communities. I've never seen, and then making heroes out of the drug dealers. I've never seen that among apes. I haven't seen them do that yet. I haven't seen apes rape millions of women in this country. Millions of women have been victimized by rape. And we know the group that is the overwhelming majority of rapists in this country. But I haven't seen apes running around raping women, cruelly destroying women's lives, violently raping them. I haven't seen apes doing that yet. And you know, apes are wonderful animals. You give an ape a banana, you feed an ape, they'll love you. They'll be loyal to you. They will love you. They really will. They're pack animals, so they're loyal. They love you if you're kind to them. I have never seen apes get trillions of dollars from the federal government with every program under the sun and still say, "This is a racist society, you are racist." I have never seen a situation where we discriminate in favor of apes for the past 60 years with affirmative action, discriminate in their favor and have a racist country in their favor. And yet they continue to complain and complain and will never be satisfied no matter what. They will always claim that it's racism and they'll always claim. I've never seen apes do that. I haven't seen apes behave like that yet. So, you know, I understand, Joe, what you're saying, but I think we should try to be fair to the apes, because they're really not bad animals. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our great friend Kahana Was Right, BT, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you say to a critic who says you can't throw the Arabs out of Israel now because it's too late? The population, the so-called territory, has already grown, and in many areas is majority or entirely Arab because Jews don't want to live with terrorists and are afraid of getting lynched. And within land, the next to the state of Israel, the so-called Israeli Arab citizens are too integrated to the state. And aside from throwing them out, which is impossible now, you can also never take away the voting rights you already gave them," unquote. What I say is very simple. The majority of them, I would throw them out because they clearly support, almost all of them clearly support our destruction, and they have no right to be there. As long as they support our destruction, they have no right to be there. So I would throw them out, but if Jews don't want to do that, then at the very least, let's encourage them to leave on their own. And the majority of them, in poll after poll, have shown that they want to leave. They don't want to stay. Hundreds of thousands of Arabs have left the land of Israel. In the past several decades, hundreds of thousands have voluntarily left the land of Israel. One of the reasons why we don't have the population crisis that we thought we were going to have. We thought 30, 40 years ago that the Arabs were going to be a majority by now. One of the reasons that hasn't happened is because huge numbers of Arabs have left. They are a nomadic people, and they're not happy in Israel. No matter what we give them, they're not happy in Israel. They're not happy when they're made citizens. They're not happy when we discriminate in their favor, which Israel does. Israel does the same thing for the Arabs that America does for the blacks here. Always discriminating in their favor. Always backing them up. Always stepping all over Jewish rights in order to help the enemies of the Jewish people. That's what Israel always does. I mean, we see this with the Hilltop Youth. There were scenes where they grabbed the head coverings off of religious Jewish women, the Jewish mothers, in front of their little children, beat them and knocked them to the ground. They were kicking and beating them until they couldn't breathe. They would never dare do that to Arab Muslim women, including Arab Muslim women who are openly cheering and going and cheering when Arab terrorists murder Jews. They would never dare pull the hijab off of some Muslim woman. I was going to say something else, but anyway, over some Muslim woman. They would never dare do something like that. So Israel discriminates in favor of the Arabs, and they're never happy, and they're never satisfied, and they want to leave. They, especially the younger ones, who are going to be the ones that produce children. that are the big threat to us in the future, they want to leave. They want to go. And if we encourage them to go, if we cut off all the goodies that they're getting now, which Jews don't get, the special goodies that only go free electricity, free water, free food, free housing, Jews don't get those things. Jews do not get those things at all. If we cut off all the goodies and had true equality in Israel, they would leave. Most of them would leave. And especially if we offered them compensation, and then if on top of that we offered them compensation to leave, 90% of them would leave. The other 10% we'll deal with. I think the other 10% should go also, but 90% of them would be gone if we did that. What do we have to lose by encouraging them to leave? We have nothing to gain by keeping them there, and nothing to lose by encouraging them to get out. And now Kahana was right, asks, and I quote, too, Trump is now crying to the media about Netanyahu for congratulating Biden, complaining that Pipi did not want peace, quote-unquote, and expressing his love for Gantz, who would give Abbas, Trump's father figure, whatever he wants. Does Trump not realize that Israelis liked him because of the embassy, the Golan Heights, etc., not just because he's Trump? Israelis should be very worried about this lunatic who sounds like he wants to sell Israel down the river to pay back the betrayal of Pipi, unquote. Trump actually did sell Israel down the river. You know, the Trump so-called peace plan was worse than the pre-1967 borders. Actually took huge chunks of pre-1967 Israel and was handing it over to the Arabs for a so-called Palestinian state. The Trump so-called peace plan was worse than the pre-1967 borders plan that was an unbelievable catastrophe that Abba even said would be Auschwitz lines. Trump already sold Israel out. The only thing that saved us from Trump is Hashem, God, giving us Arab enemies that are so dumb that they rejected the Trump plan. Dumb beyond words. But there's no question, Trump, the Jews think that Trump was great for Israel. It was the worst, the ultimate nightmare. He was bad for Israel, proposing things that are terrible for Israel. And the Jews loved him, which means they would have trusted him and they were going to go along with his crazy plan. Thank God, Baruch Hashem, that we had Arab enemies that saved us, that Hashem saved us through our enemies. A miracle, a real miracle. But that doesn't always have to be. That will not necessarily always happen in the future. So we better be on guard, and we better help the Hilltop youth so that we have people in place to make a Palestinian state impossible. Otherwise, we're going to face a disaster. Thank you, Kahana was right. And I want to thank everybody again for another program that I very much enjoy doing. I always enjoy being with our great JTFers. And remember, we're fighting a battle here that is historic. It's not by accident that the Hilltop youth, who now get most of their funds from us, the Hilltop youth are the number one item on the list of demands of all of our enemies in negotiations all the time. Always they say, you've got to remove these illegal Hilltop outposts, they call them. That's their number one demand all the time. That's not an accident. The Hilltop youth are our ticket to saving Israel from disaster. And they're great heroes. How could it be? How could we live in a world so crazy that we don't all want to support them and do everything we can to help them? How could that be? JTF does want to do that, and that's why we got to fight together and make a difference and change this world for the better. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.